This is episode 32 with Riel Miller and Miguel Jimenez.
Welcome back to the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. If you're interested in innovative wisdom and practical tools for leading in a complex, uncertain, and exponentially changing world, then this podcast is for you.
Aloha and welcome back to this episode of the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, co-founder of Haku Global. Today's co-guests are Riel Miller and Miguel Jimenez. Riel has been co-creating innovation, leadership, and transformation in both the private and public sectors around the world for the past 30 years. He's one of the world's leading strategic foresight designers and practitioners, and currently Riel holds the position of Head of Foresight and Futures Literacy at UNESCO in Paris. Riel's specialty is bringing decision makers to question the assumptions underlying current choices and exploring the potential of the present. He specializes in the cross-section of the futures of money, the future of schooling and university, the future of cyberspace, the future of technology, and the future of governance. Miguel is a futures and foresight practitioner with a strong focus on observing systems holistically. He makes sense of context, driving forces, systems relationships, global trends, and key influencers shaping the future to forecast, design, and implement better solutions for society, businesses, and government. He's currently the CEO and founder of FFWD, a future anticipation and strategic foresight office, helping you to transform for what is coming next. In this episode, we explore the impossible role of leadership, why the context of the past might be shaping the wrong futures, why leadership needs to see uncertainty as an asset instead of a risk, the significance of bringing awareness to creativity and integrating it into the leadership process, why the past should never be immortal, and why leadership needs to embrace future literacy to better understand the risks and opportunities of the future. Let's listen.
So thank you, Riel and Miguel, for joining me today on this episode of the Future Intelligent Leadership Podcast. And as always, I want to start with this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent about the future, given this climate of uncertainty, complexity, exponential change in the world? And I'd like both of you to answer it from your own perspectives. And I'll just start with Riel.
Thanks a lot. Really a very great pleasure to be here with you today. And congratulations on this podcast and the work you've been doing. So very much a pleasure for me to join you and to have this discussion. I think that if I have to reflect on this, I think leadership's been given a kind of impossible mission in the current world. And I think that that's not leadership's fault. It's not the fault of the person who has said, yeah, why am I not like Iron Man? Or, you know, why can't I be a superhero and solve the world's problems or be a super entrepreneur like Steve Jobs or something like that? It's because I think we've cast the amazing ability that humans have to imagine things and act on what they've imagined. I think we've cast it in a way that makes leadership impossible. And that doesn't mean that you can't have local, by local, I mean simply time, space, defined, limited engagement in achieving something specific. You can have a fantastic meal because the chef has created the fantastic meal and they put that all together. And that's true also for maybe the Manhattan Project and maybe even something like D-Day, or maybe even something like landing a person on the moon. And that looks phenomenal and incredible. But we have to remember that these were very specifically targeted projects. They weren't things like world peace, the elimination of poverty, the overcoming of patriarchy, the elimination of oppression and exploitation, which are very different types of goals. And I want to also say something then about firms and even governments. A firm which wants to deliver on an effective product has a very narrow and specific mandate, and you can do that better or worse. A government that wants to deliver better water or roll out vaccines can do that in a better or worse way. These are similar to the kind of projects that I would consider to be D-Day style. You know, operations science, operations research, good logistics, business planning, strategic planning. All of those things are effective in these narrowly constrained contexts. And I think I want to add another to sort of come around back up to my first, my opening point. All of those local efforts make up an assemblage. They make up something that has a bigger context, that gives a bigger canvas for all of it. And imagine that we stipulated that all of the organisms, all of those local contexts should always succeed. They should be all immortal and last forever. Well, we wouldn't have evolution. We wouldn't have transformation. We wouldn't have the end of the dinosaurs and the emergence of humans. I mean, we wouldn't have a creative universe. We would have a static universe where each component is immortal forever because they're presciently successful at predicting and dominating the future. So my overall point here is that I think we're in a period of transition in which the very basic idea of leadership is has to be called into question in the old paradigm, and that we really need to begin to think about a fundamentally new paradigm. It's a bit cliched now these days, the term paradigm, but it has quite a specific meaning in a Kuhnian sense, which has to do with different principles of functioning, different axioms and theoretical foundations. And I would see leadership today moving towards a different perspective on its role and its nature. And to just conclude, I would say that nature is being able to detect the creativity of the world around us and bring that creativity to the attention of others without telling them what to do with it necessarily, but being able to name the unnameable, because we're continuously creating things without names, the unknown. And being able to detect the unknown and share the unknown, to me, is the generosity of leadership in an assemblage context. This is radically different from the perspective that dominates today, which is that the leader should deliver what they said they would deliver, and they should therefore control the future. I think that's an invitation for not only megalomania and authoritarianism, but it's an invitation to disappointment.
Great, thanks, Riel. Miguel, what's your take on this question?
First, Tyler, thank you for inviting me. And also, it's a great job that, as Riel said, already disseminating and evangelizing on futures and foresight. So that's been great. And the people you already had invited in the previous episodes, it's amazing. Great conversation going on. So Riel already pointed a very interesting thing, is that leadership today, they are expected to tame the future. They are expected to deliver results. And that is the main thing I see that needs to change, is that the short-termism view of the world. So why do we think that the future fits in the next 4 years? That's for politicians and democracy. So we choose a new one every 4 years. And how are they going to plan for something longer than that if there is no incentive in doing that? They're going to be out of their role. And if you go into companies, you go into the position of a CEO of a major global company, they might even stay in the position shorter than that. They stay for 2, 3, maybe 4 years. And how are they going to change anything when they are expected to deliver results for shareholders? And shareholders do not care about the future. They care about compound interest, interest rates, money returns, and a lot of different things. But at the end, it's exactly what Riel said, is that the future does not happen in isolation. It's not that one person sits in some place, in any place of the world, and say, hey, this is going to be the future. I'm going to deliver it. It's going to be implanted in everyone's head, and everyone is going to be doing this from now on. It doesn't happen in isolation. It's a combination of things that need to shape over time. And the time that leadership is expected or given to provide results is shorter than the time the future needs to develop. And in relation to that, about the thing that, of what happened last year in terms of uncertainty and volatility and all that, that is very scary for shareholders. When you have something at stake, it's very scary to think about volatility. You might lose everything. And also for the future to be uncertain. But if you think of it, everything is natural. Uncertainty and volatility is natural. If there is certainty, and Riel already pointed to this, there is nothing you can change. There is no way you can influence the outcome. If everything is certain, it just happens forever and ever and ever. So that's everything. So you need uncertainty. And volatility is allowing you to persist thing over time. I remember there were basically two ways of living forever or staying forever. The first one was immortality, which is great if natural resources or whatever you use as a source of energy is constant. You don't need to change anything. You just stay and you have everything around you. So there is no need to change. But if there is a change in the context, so the ecosystem is changing, the other way to reach or live forever is reproduction. And reproduction is meant as a way to adapt to a new context. And this is what we are missing in leadership. We are expecting things to be certain, non-volatile, and also produce the same results that we've been producing all the time. But life itself is not working that way. So how can we expect humans or in the human context to work in a different way? And then even in that context, we take leadership and we expect them to provide results like these superpowers that Riel said. It's like, yes, I'm the super CEO, I'm going to do this and I never fail and I always give you 500% return on whatever you're putting here. That is the most difficult thing, the short-termism and the pre-assumption that uncertainty and volatility are bad things, when indeed they are the only opportunity and chance we have to change what may lay ahead of us.
Great. Really great points from both of you. I really appreciate this starting point here. And it seems like there's definitely this connection between this idea of really expanding the context of not only leadership, but of the future, right? That we've put constraints on it that aren't realistic or maybe not helpful or useful at times. And Riel, would you like to follow up on that thought?
Yeah. And I want to pick up on Miguel's point.
Yeah, please.
Which I appreciate a lot, and the point that you're raising about the constraints. And I mean, from my point of view, genuine strategic leadership will close a firm. Will say, look, we've reached the end of the line on this. Mm. We should be reborn in six other forms. We should redeploy this energy and these assets somewhere else, and that should be considered a brilliant move. Mm. In other words. This is something that's very kind of foreign to the current way of thinking, but decline is not bad. Mm. It's natural, as Miguel said, and to be generous to birth and to think of what you're doing as good compost for what comes next is to me a natural way of thinking about leadership. It does not attempt to be immortal and it does not attempt to enforce reproduction on the same model. This is one of the really big things that's up today, because reproduction on the same model is the reproduction of slavery. It's the reproduction of patriarchy. It's the reproduction of racism. Reproduction on the same model is a way to perpetuate. It's the way to create immortality of civilizations or of firms or of governments. And that's a form of suicide, honestly. Mm. And the species is seeing the damage that approach does in the form of climate change and in the form of this vulnerability to the pandemic, because we paid no attention in our arrogance to our fragility and to our natural condition. which puts us on an equal footing, not an exceptional footing, with the world around us.
Miguel, follow-up thoughts.
Yes, yeah, so one of the things that regarding the expanding context, that happened last year. Before that, we've seen many companies care about the strategies, they care about products, releases, and everything they need to do as a company. It depends on their mandate, their sector, the industry, whatever. But what happened last year is that every single company got involved into human things. Now we care about lives, we care about viruses, we care a little bit more about the environment, and we even care about going out and taking a sun bath just for the sake of it. And that was in 2019, it was weird. So we expanded this context. And that expansion of the context is giving you one thing that we didn't have just 2 years ago. We had the knowledge, we have things that were pointing towards a decline in climate, decline of the ecosystem, that we were disrupting things for the good or for the bad in some cases, but we were disrupting things just for the sake of disrupting things. It's like the old Facebook's approach of move fast and break things. I think that happened in 2020. It was not because of us, but it broke many silos in thinking. And now the expanded context is including the whole system. So we care a little bit more about many things. The output probably is not something that we are going to see in 2021, but just think of the kids. Everyone that was born in the last year, they know nothing but face masks. They've been their whole life, just 100% of their life, isolated and confined at home. They appreciate, they might, I'm not sure how they feel because they are just 1 year old, but they might appreciate the sun in a complete different way than we do. Mm. When are we going to see that? Probably in 15, 20 years. Because that is the interesting thing is that just because we see something happening today, just because there is correlation on some of the issues, we cannot anticipate causality or causality in the way that the future is going to develop. Because you don't know. Now you need the time to do that. But this expanded context is something that some leadership, some people around organizations and governments are taking, and they are embracing it. And some others are pretty scared of what is coming next, basically because they don't know. And that might be exactly as Riel said, that might be closing your company or your country goes out of business in the sense of GDP, for example. Mm. So what are we going to do in that case? Mm. But the context is already expanded. Now we need to go a little bit beyond that uncertainty and start to act on these new elements that we have in the new expanded context. Mm.
Yeah, I'm and please feel free to answer Riel in any way, but just curious too about this idea that seems to be coming up of, you know, it's there's context, there's goals, and there's constraints, right? And how do we deal with these things? Because we seem like the old models of those of how those worked aren't going to maybe work in the future, right? And what are some new ways of thinking about how to model this properly? But please answer in any way that you feel responsive to Miguel.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the issue here, and I think Miguel framed it in the way that we're experiencing it, which is, and let me make the kind of the pitch for futures literacy as a capability. Yeah. It's that, you know, we were in a lot of longstanding routines, and that routine made was like being in a theater. You know, you're looking at a future and you know what that future is, and you're watching it unfold, and you behave accordingly. You go to the office, you go to the park, you socialize, you do all those things. And then suddenly that gets ripped away. And it's a violent thing. It's painful. It's disruptive. It's frightening, of course. But at the same time, it created an immense opportunity to understand the power of these images of the future. And, you know, it's not that... I'm not complaining here, But, you know, in the 90s, I wrote about telepresence and the potential of telepresence. And then in the 2000s, the early 2000s, with Cisco, I wrote again on telepresence and the potential of telepresence, which could also be telephones, by the way, not just video. And so podcasts and so conversations where people don't have enough bandwidth, so we do it just with voice. Those have all been possible for what, 50 years more, you know, 30 years, the 20 years, and yet we didn't use them. And we didn't explore them. And I said just the other day in a meeting that I feel that we've seen how absolutely and fundamentally elitist globalization has been. In other words, face-to-face meetings are a privilege of a very few. But the kind of meetings that we can now do that are accessible to the world, we need to develop the protocols, we need to develop the rituals, we need to develop the trust creation procedures and handshakes and bows and smiles that make up the etiquette and the sequencing of creating a true global conversation. Globalization all of a sudden became, to my mind, much more serious in the sense of democratization, openness, and the world as a whole. But it was possible to do that 10 years ago. We just didn't do it, which shows you the power of these images of the future. And I think Miguel is absolutely right, is that all of a sudden we can rethink the office, we can rethink the relationship that we have to being at home and the difficulty of educating our children, but also the intergenerational knowledge and the pleasure and the pain that you have when you're all in the same place and you're interdependent. All of these things are huge learning opportunities, and they open up the way, they stimulate our imagination. That's what futures literacy is about. It's about being able to use your imagination, because the future is always imaginary, more effectively. And that's also, I think, by the way, to go back to the theme, a task for leadership, to cultivate this openness, to cultivate the imagination, to not lock people into one simple and single goal, unless, you know, you want to make cooked dinner or go to the theater together, but rather open us up to all the potential that the present gives us, because it's a creative present and we need to be agile and spontaneous to take advantage of it. So, I mean, I think this is really a huge shift that's taking place. And today we've been invited by the pandemic to step up.
And just kind of follow up on that, Real, is that, do you think, you know, from the pandemic, do you see it as, you know, we had this certain way of doing things to achieve goals, let's say, whether it be just an individual or a leader. And all of a sudden that just doesn't work anymore, but we're still trying to use the same model, right? That's kind of one of the main problems we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it's, look, I mean, extrapolation is the easiest way to think about the future. Mm-hmm. It's only natural. I mean, a baby cries because when it cried once, it got fed. And then all of a sudden it says, if I cry, I get fed. And that's cool. And so it develops an anticipatory model, and it's based on expectations. So the power of the future here is that it's anchored in expectations. Expectations are anchored in the past. We extrapolate into the future and we go, you know, that's easy. Just let me cruise along. But, you know, this is where wisdom comes in. And by the way, it's kind of a sad thing that wisdom has sort of disappeared from our societies. Experience shows us, you know, let's say you're a young person, you decide to get married, and you have this image of marriage as this kind of constant thing that's on the rails, and it just keeps on going straight ahead. And then you realize over time, wow, I have to evolve. I evolve. I change. They change. The relationship changes. Children arrive. All sorts of things change. And you understand that things are not linear. They're not extrapolated. And that if you have a narrow expectation that it has to stay on just the railroad track, you're going to have a crash, because it's not the way the world works. And so as we experience uncertainty, creativity, and the only certainty is certainty, we let go of this desire to extrapolate the future. And that's where Miguel is absolutely right. There are some places and some governments that are saying, this is a chance to really rethink stuff. Let's take advantage of that. And there are others who are just panicking and saying, my goodness, I have to go back to the ideas that I had when I was a teenager. That's ridiculous.
Miguel, any follow up?
Yeah, so that it's impressive because what it's happening actually is that we moved from a passive attitude towards the future just a couple of years ago to an active one. And also the balance of power has shifted now because everyone is at home thinking, they're reflecting on things happening on the outside because of the context change, the pandemic, whatever. And even some of them lost their jobs, some of them had kids, some of them married in this time. There are many things changing for people, but that shift the balance of power. So you can see how leadership is now not only answering the questions and responding to the requirements of stakeholders being shareholders, but also to people they were not aware of. Now these people can be their own employees and now they want to work from home. What are you going to do? You just invested in this new huge building, super nice, with the decor is impressive. And what are you going to do with that? Is that if people want to work from home and they want to still get paid the same, can they live in the cheapest place in your country? Or shall we pay less to them because of that? Are we rebalancing the access to money independently if you live in New York, San Francisco, or Singapore compared to Lagos in Nigeria? Is that now you can work from everywhere. And also, you can expect to have some human connection. So it's not about working from anywhere. So you can travel. That is okay. It's perfect. But you don't have to be 9 to 5 in the same place with the same people and the constraints that are in that situation. So all the leadership balance shift. And that is the thing about future literacy that is interesting. It's like, even with some of the customers we have, or I will say most of the customers we have, they expect foresight and future thinking to produce outputs in the next quarter. And that is it's good. We can produce output for the next quarter, mostly in terms of training, skills, frameworks, methodologies, processes, things that you can actually develop and implement. Now, what is the output of all that for leadership? When they see a report of things that might happen in 10 to 15 years, they say, hey, okay, I don't care. I'm 60 now, so I'm going to be retired by that moment. So how can I do that? The issue is that when you become futures literate, what you do is not that you get trained in the future, is that you understand multiple possibilities that lay ahead in the future, and you are able to connect them to issues you have in the present time. So that is completely different. That is probably the biggest skill that leadership need to acquire, is yet being able to understand all those possibilities, read a lot, research a lot, understand visions that are completely opposite to yours, and make the connections to the issues you have today beyond implementing a framework, a tool, a process, or even a department with 600 people working in the future. That is going to be nice in terms of showing that you do things, but if you don't become more literate on what the future might pose to, what are the risks and the opportunity that you have with those different elements, then nothing is going to change. And that is what happened before the pandemic. There was no incentive to shape the future. Everything was working perfectly. Everyone was at this cinema, that real exposed, looking at the movie. It's convenient. We are human. Our minds are lazy. They don't want to waste energy. We have all these biases just to allow us to go on an autopilot. But now the autopilot machine is broken. And we need to start driving. Some people remember how to drive. Some other, they never learned to drive. So now they are struggling. And that is the thing that is more interesting. We need to learn how to drive in this time just to get to a place that actually is like driving. You never know where you are where you're going. And actually, you don't even know the road or the path that you are taking there. So it's that's the beauty of it. It's like the beauty of the future.
Go ahead, Rob.
I can just pick up on that very directly by saying, I think there's an analogy here that speaks to people. There's an obvious difference between a place where people know how to read and write and a place where people don't know how to read and write. That's a change in the conditions of change. It's the same as a place where everybody has a cell phone and nobody has a cell phone. It's a change in the conditions of change. And what Miguel is talking about is a change in the conditions of change. And that then alters what is possible, what's imaginable. It changes the functioning of the entire organism, as it were. So I think that we do have an entry point there with respect to futures literacy. And can I just pick up on this aspect of spontaneity? I think that improvisation and spontaneity require a lot of prior training. You need to be skilled to be agile, that's not saying we don't prepare. But if you prepare to be skilled in the agility, spontaneity, improvisation, you recognize the extent to which path dependency and plans that kind of constrain what you can imagine as being impediments to that improvisation and capability to take advantage of creativity. So I think it is important for us to emphasize that these are really natural attributes of human beings. Despite our fear of death and therefore in some senses a yearning for immortality, we're more generous than that, because we know that if we lived forever, we would give no space for our grandchildren. And that there's a natural kind of continuity in the ethics. Some people might call it, the way that you behave in your life, that is a legacy. And instead of legacies being statues, which, sit there and are good for birds to stand on, legacy in, I think, this kind of more futures literate context is about the way you lived and the ethics that you demonstrated in your life. And that's what you leave to the future. You don't leave a big building that everybody's going to have to worry about, or a bridge that's going to make things, rigid in the way that people go from one place to another. It's not a pyramid or a wall in China or a pyramid in Chichen Itza. Those are the symbols and the approaches of societies that yearn for immortality and that want to reproduce through continuity. And are in effect afraid of the future and afraid of the world around us. And that's a fear it's a terrible fear to live with. I think that this kind of wake up call of the pandemic and of climate extinction, and extinction rebellion is saying, look, at a very deep level, there's a fundamental flaw that makes it impossible for us to live in a way that's not anxiety driven and stressful in the universe that we happen to be in. We don't have much choice about the universe, but we do have some choice about the way we approach its virtues, its strengths. And that's something that I think is very interesting about the current moment, and definitely something that's interesting for leadership. I'll finish this point on this one, which is that leaders who look to foresight for genius clues are companies, and I won't name them because they've been clients, that died, frankly, because genius forecasting is like playing roulette. You might as well put all your money on one number and wait till the chip falls. Well, you might win, but it's, we know the house wins, right? Whereas companies that let certain parts die, that let certain parts be born, companies that have the ethos of saying, everybody has knowledge within our company, and the future is distributed throughout this company. And the challenge of leadership is to make sense of it. Are to me much more effective leaders and much more living companies. And I would say the same for governments, by the way. Governments that try to depend on genius forecasting and more technocratic means for planning are the governments that are going to be brittle, rigid, and will fail. They will make promises they cannot keep, and they will create disappointment by their very philosophy. So this is something that I think can be very appealing to leaders today, to make the transition to a more futures literate world, because it makes their life easier.
Great point. I think that kind of follows back upon your original point about the leader being the superhero, right? And it's just it's just not a reality. And I want to wrap up here because I know we're running out of time. And to do so, I'd like to have both of you just kind of, you know, share your final thoughts from this discussion, and like to talk, have Miguel talk first.
Yeah, so listening to Real and the universe, it makes me think always about uncertainty. And uncertainty to me is like Heisenberg's principle of uncertainty. Mm. It's like there is no way we can observe something without interfering with it. And that is what we have laying ahead of us, is that we are seeing, observing change. There is no way that change is not going to change you to interfere on what we are going to be doing. And it can be raising your kids, educational, in your company, in your society, your community, your country, or at the global scale. So yes, embrace Heisenberg's principle and embrace change. Observe what's going on and just go with it. Let's swim together in this.
Yeah. That's very inspiring, Miguel. I'm very much in agreement about our entanglement. Let me though just kind of land on this point. Futures literacy, as we've been using it in this conversation, is a skill. And I think to make the transition, because it is a transition from uncertainty as a threat to uncertainty as an asset, requires some experience, some learning. And we have definite ways that we can make that learning accessible to people. Meaning, as I said earlier, because everybody anticipates, even a baby before it can talk, we can get, it's relatively easy, a lot like reading and writing. You say to a child, look, reading and writing is about taking spoken language. You know how to talk. Yeah, you can talk. Well, it's about taking spoken language and making it something that can be written and then read by somebody else. In the same way, futures literacy allows us to distinguish different ways of using the future. The kind of point I was making at the outset, that, you know, there's a planning future and there's an emergent future. And this is something that we have evidence for now, that I've been working on at UNESCO, also working with Miguel and others, that shows that we can introduce this into a company, into a community, etc. So it's a lot like the beginning of reading and writing for all. Well, where were all the schools going to come from? Where were all the teachers going to come from? Where were the textbooks going to come from? You know, that was a huge challenge. It was a crazy idea. All children in the whole society are going to learn to read and write. It seemed impossible, but that took courage, and it took determination, and it took experimentation. And I think today we're in exactly the same place with futures literacy, with determination, experimentation, and the willingness to walk the talk. I think we can make this transition.
Great. Thanks, Riel. And then this final question I have for both of you, it might be the toughest one of the day. It's, what's one word you'd like to leave leaders to be more future intelligent? Miguel?
Uncertainty.
Yeah. Emergence.
Great. Well, Riel and Miguel, thank you both for being here today and sharing your insights, your wisdom, and your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you so much, Tyler.
Have a good day. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global,
We believe it is time for more futures intelligent leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.